Greetings, humans, living and dying in the Anthropocene. This is Jamming Their Transmission, where rebels, freaks, critics, dissidents, iconoclasts, and oddballs live. I'm your fellow traveler, John Madero. This is Jamming Their Transmission. I'm John Madera. The Association of Writers and Writing Programs Conference and Book Fair, colloquially known as AWP, is an annual destination for writers, editors, publishers, teachers, and students. The conference features over 2,000 presenters and over 500 readings, panels, and lectures. The book fair features over 800 presses, journals, and literary organizations from around the world. AWP is taking place in Portland, Oregon this year, March 27th through the 30th. I won't be there this year, alas, but today I'm happy to host a podcast of readings from a number of great writers who also won't be attending AWP this year, including Brendan Lorber, Elizabeth Costello, Hilary Leftwich, Jesse Bender, Jesse Janicek, Micah Zevin, and Michael Martone.
Hello, this is Brendan Lorber, and I'm going to read a few poems from my new book, If This Is Paradise, Why Are We Still Driving? I am the time-traveling mayor of the three-hour tour. Like you, I'm from the future that used to exist in supplication to a supercut of cold opens and their admission that we can only know the name of a place like New York or Orleans once it's a little old, and the names only make sense as portals into other futures based on mistaken identity and hidden flaws that wait for their moment, as an airplane mechanic comes home, finds a leftover bolt in their bag, and thinks, I hope that's not important. Nobody wants to develop a taste for pre-owned chili dogs or a Freudian physical therapist who wants you to work out your own over-rotated shoulders. Anything made of lines and worthy of my time has other lines too, including time, especially when this version is mostly in a ditch that's not the last ditch, but is close. This is so us, right? Is what the time traveler said to herself, trapped in the paradox of which me does the yogurt in the fridge belong to. Perhaps all of them, all the tragedies, throw us through the gale to save the others from a cross-stitch in time. The tour was 3 hours back to before I lost my nerve, or maybe just my good hat, but I got trapped in 2023. What a gently used chicken platter of a year. Everyone was a creative director or unemployed, and both seem to be up to the same things with tasers and human rights. Don't listen to the other me, who also just arrived, or the other, who is still angry about the yogurt. Please understand, my jaunty tone exists to make this super dire warning a little palatable while we hide in a secret season between spring and summer, because right now, and into my eyes, are the last place anyone would think to look. This is beginning of the and. It's the anniversary of some reason we must all still be alive, as though anything that begins happy could stay there or anywhere else. If it's going to end in tears, can the tears be in Paris? Maybe we can make out instructions or something if we move all the lamps to the center of the room or the room to another era. There are many to draw from within one unending time. Listen to failure to be an option as a meathead anthem that gets it right, but for the wrong reasons. The options are infinite, but outcomes are absent here at the end of Zeno's bathroom timeline, ever slower the closer to catharsis, unless we're already there, done, but never finished, like a half-composed text from behind the wheel of what's left of a car. This is Lucky Break of Day. The nor'easter shut down the subways, so whatever prevented me from going to your party was canceled, including your party and any means to get there. Everything we say hides what we mean, but also creates a little space to discover it, Like clouds get the blame, but it's the sun that blots out all the stars, even on a perfect day. Even perfection can't be a thing until the day is tallied and no longer happening, like a scenic road and the overlooks with shrines to whoever didn't quite make the turn. This is all the time led to this. We sustained minor damage, but mostly to our plans. Everybody gets the flashlight long enough to see what's wrong, but not to fix it. We all like whiskey, but not loose in our bag or in the bus driver. Here, a list of closings, public schools, experimental or transitional relationships, the subway, sex based on validation, all East River crossings, the print industry. The only place to evacuate was into already abandoned apartments. And finally, the shore in the woods. I have a core, less solid than music or an argument filtered through thin walls, a set of beliefs that lives by the shore I visit a couple times a year, where I light a fire whose light you can read about the fire by. The jury met in secret in the woods, and though the contest winners were chosen, the jurors mostly judged each other. But what I am trying to say is, the light in my heart is your heart.
Hello, my name is Elizabeth Costello, and I will read three poems. The Spinster's Song, Love Song of the Late Night Mop, and Song Sung in Space. The Spinster's Song. What makes you think you would be the one I'd tell my troubles to? Or that what you think they are, they are. Don't drop that drop of blood on the white skein and think of me, whose rubies never counted in the game. No house that's mine has been my home but this wheel and what is threaded through it. You call it unfamiliar, this season without a name, but I have known them always. Chakdaya, the quiet one, who hurry, who bears the bells to court. Long and long and low and long we labor on this earth, birthing stones and bitumen. You see, there is no one way to making nothing, and nothing is not made. Love Song of the Late Night Mop. All day long I press my face to the bucket bottom, dreaming of you. When night comes with your calluses, I lose my worry to our purpose. Deft grip woman, singer of songs on 50 floors, for you I gladly plunge the boiling bleach. For you I rise, furious with hunger for piss and ladies' smearings, for every trace of city's muck, microbial riot, and leaden soot. I'll never know your world outside these 50 floors of linoleum powders, grout rot, and urine cakes. But if I were a thing which wishes would be granted, I'd be your weapon. When the night watchman undoes his buckle next, I beg you, take me up and hit him with me. Kill him, darling. Then let us bleach the blood. Song sung in space. They called me Missing Matrix. They called me Quantum Queer. They hadn't a word for where I might be, where light and dark of equal bright and carbon drifts on quantum wind. If birthed in earth, I burn my root in rocket fires and stay, as now, as all, as nothing, as is here. I feel my fluid circle through, forgetting as I go. They called me Carbon Calibrate, reflecting billions light. I call this whole a soul and birth it sphere by sphere. To sing such songs I'll never learn, such music always near.
Hello, my name is Hillary Leftwich, and I'll be reading a poem entitled Pain Euphoria. I woke unable to open my mouth. I'm grinding my teeth in my sleep. My dentist tells me it's either fear or stress. Figure out which one or both, and you'll figure out where your pain is coming from. Pain can be a symptom of something hidden, waiting, a phantom group of cells. If you are in pain, try not to think about the baby kidnapped from your neighbor's trailer when you were 12. You saw it on the news. Everyone did. The family dog shot and left to die. You were scared, tried to sleep in your mother's bed, but your mother hid secret cardboard men in her closet. Sometimes they turned out to be real. I read about the mandible and how it's the only part of the skull consisting of bone that's able to move. Clenching your jaw while you sleep can cause overuse of muscles, sensitivity to pain. This is referred to as a type of hurt syndrome. The source of where the pain begins is unknown. Every pain has its root, which must also have an outlet, an ending. Everything is connected. Lately, I've been feeling you in my bones, a low hum. You are the frozen field across from my house when I was 7. 7 was when I first realized I would die one day. 7 is the last time I was clean, untouched. In the field, there were no animal tracks scarring the snow. A perfect pasture. The field remained pure. There are reports of the hum phenomenon stretching from New Mexico all the way to the UK. The vibrations are reported at 32 hertz up to 80 hertz. Once you hear it, you can never unhear it. The first time you were inside of me, I could never unfeel it. I think of this feeling as static. I think of this feeling as a frozen field. I want it to rest there, a stationary form, safe from itself. When I was 16, our neighbor blew his brains out in his bathtub. The morning he died, I was touching myself under my fake satin sheets. The feel of the fabric against my legs later became reminiscent of your skin. I heard the pop of the gun the same second I climaxed, my knees buzzing. Later, the police told my dad the suicide was planned. Our neighbor woke up that morning and made himself breakfast. Eggs, bacon, hash browns. He climbed into his bathtub with his 9mm after writing a letter to his mother. The bullet devastated his skull and his teeth scattered like pills on the blue bathroom tile. It took 2 days to find all the pieces of his skull. Suicide euphoria only occurs after someone has fully committed to killing themselves. Happiness, peace, acceptance. These are all signs. Robin Williams was found by his personal assistant hanging from a belt in his closet. When going through his belongings, his wife noticed all of his watches were missing and later found them in a sock tucked away at a friend's house. When she asked the friend about the sock with the watches, they had no idea why Williams had hidden them there or why. There are vibrations of our past that can never be buried. Williams was said to have looked like a cardboard cutout of a man when he was found inside his closet. If we take away someone's euphoria, we'll never know where they hide their watches. It took 2 days for the throbbing to stop in my jaw. It took 2 days for the hazmat cleaners to find the forgotten pieces of my neighbor's skull. The baby stolen from your neighbor's trailer in the night was never found. It took 2 days for the family dog to drag itself from the abandoned field after it was shot, only to die alone on the doorstep, waiting for someone to return home. Lately, I've been feeling you in my bones. I hear a watch ticking, a gun pop, a frozen field cracks. The source of where your pain begins is unknown. You are finding my forgotten pieces. They are hiding behind blood and bone. Untouched, clean. Every pain has its root.
Hi, my name is Jesse Bender, and I'm reading an excerpt from my forthcoming novel, The Book of the Last Word, out from Whiskey Tit in May 2019. So this is chapter 6. Genesis 8:8 says, "And he set forth a dove from him to see if the waters were abated." For the past 3 hours, Arthur had been traveling to his sister Margaret's house. When he picked up his children, they would be a family of three. His new daughter was 3 and 6 months. He was surrounded by threes, though he did not know it yet. He would see it eventually. "Come on, come on." Arthur Noyes was standing in the narrow cubicle, hovering above the toilet and pulling on himself, leaning all his weight on one arm. The middle finger and thumb of his left hand formed a tight circle. He squeezed his eyes shut and grit his teeth into a strained smile. His movements were manic, and his thoughts bumped haphazardly from image to image, trying to latch on to something substantive. But he always circled back to the comb, moving back and forth like waves in the sea, pushed by a thin white hand. Sometimes he saw the little boy, his face punctured by siren cries. There were 3 stalls in this men's room. Arthur had chosen the middle one, because he never went in the first, the most used, and the other was a handicap stall. It was nicer inside the tighter space anyway. Felt like less air existed in there, a little bit like choking. The metal had been painted green, sloppy with streaks and age, and the white-tiled walls were etched with thick brown grit. Sweat beads formed between the blonde strands of Arthur's thinning hair as he feverishly tugged on what felt like bread dough. Despite his best efforts, there was the faint noise of a man holding his breath, the breathing in, the sound of the lack of sound, coupled with something close to a wet napkin being flattened repeatedly and rhythmically, squish, squish, squish. After a few moments more, struggling in vain, Arthur paused, leaned his head down a bit, and let a large glob of spit fall into his open palm. When Arthur was a child, every night after dinner, his mother would brush his hair with one of her decorative silver combs. In summer, they'd sit on the porch, he on the lower step, both of them facing the same direction, with Arthur cradled between her knees. Mother would take the comb from her pinned back hair and drag it slowly across Arthur's scalp as they talked of the day, or as she sang, or as they sat in silence watching the sunset. The comb was about 4 inches wide, with a dove etched onto the handle, nested between scrolls of Art Nouveau thistles and fleurs. His mother wore it almost every day, the gray face of the dove peeking out from her hair. When she died, it was the one thing Arthur kept. It sat in his desk drawer now. But he still saw it when he closed his eyes, the dove's black eye, the pointed face. In between the imagined genitals and moaning, it kept surfacing, the dove flying at the behest of her long fingers. Arthur grew frustrated. If he stuck out his stomach as far as he couldn't see his erection. He opened his eyes for a moment, looking down, and there was nothing there but movement off the horizon. When he closed his eyes again, Arthur could see his mother's hands rubbing that protrusion and then moving slowly up his chest to his throat. The frustration began to subside. The door inside the gas station bathroom swung open with a proclamation of hinges and quick-moving feet. The other man's breath was heavy and even. He moved into and latched the first stall. Though nothing in the second stall paused, the thought of how many germs lived in the first stall flashed across Arthur's mind. He heard the weight of a large man falling on the seat, the stranger's weary sigh. "Fuck," the voice muttered lowly on the other side. Arthur squeezed his eyes shut, and holding his breath, moved faster. Something was happening now. In the darkness inside him, images oscillated between mother and genitals and the idea of his son. Sometimes a bird flew in. Sometimes images of a large man on the toilet. Jeans around thick ankles. Maybe a mustache. Time was at once rattling and lugubrious in the black. People, real and fake, alive and dead, came in and out whenever they pleased. There was this straining on both sides of the green wall that separated them. The stranger tried to escape it, but Arthur tried to lose himself in it. He had a son now, a son of sorts. A little boy had come into his life, and Arthur would seize the opportunity to shape him into something greater than himself. He would cry for hours when Arthur cut all the evil away, like it was an irreparable loss, a death of sorts. Arthur would move along that boy's body with the same thin white hands as his mother, the same white hands pulling and pulling now at something stronger than it had been before. A parent is an adult who shapes the life of a child. Grooming, one might call it. There was a prolonged grunt from next door and the splash of release. Arthur's whole body contracted. Surrounded by shit, a white dove flew forth, finally released from long white fingers, a death of sorts. It smelled like rotten salt, just like the sea.
Hi, I'm Jessie Janicek, and I'm going to read a few poems from my book Madcap, which is forthcoming from Stalking Horse Press in May 2019. Arboreal housewax did me like that. Snow on the devil and my ghost fell over. Then again, this was alone time. Then again, I'd never tire of the red town church square every night. Loose meat in the tornado shelter, masked boys riding by in the cold, chromy cars, screaming, "Don't break the goats." Then again, opals and crushing up pills, wood, chains, and light. Okay, that's pretty good. A coat closet, morphine, and tits in the dollhouse. Badness and blackness and my jewel-toned nighty. I'm afraid of the night. I'm afraid of soap operas on the Predicta TV. I'm afraid of leaving something at the injection site. I'm afraid of the wood smoking near triple wicks, playing twins in a split screen, red wig, I'm in Brooklyn. When I wear the gold heels, I fuck like a dog, pyramidal points cutting straight from the wood. Yes, this was alone time, and you only said something nice about me since I said something nice about you. Art Deco lanterns, antecedent anniversaries, a lime green smock dress, shaking like Saturn, vodka straight from the bottle. You're laying an egg in your foreign bed. Is it your back or is it your kidneys? I'm lying blue cold in the orchard, but I've horsed around. And isn't it lucky in the movie you two are in love and I end up hanging myself? Or I keep swinging bonbons past the flames? Isn't it lucky as I lie in the twine spiderweb, my hair curls like Veronica Lake? All these new women keep coming up in bad faith, and the pressure of welcoming someone, and I touch the doorframe, obsessive, compulsive, and I touch a little of your confession, but it's limp fatalism, and now my third eye is so tired. Bathhouse wax, weight, and fate. Somewhere you don't know I'm freezing, walking downtown on Dead Chief Trail to be with the monsters, hide in the closed liquor store, climbing back up to be with the dark, somewhere you don't know. Your luck is trying and it needs the vapors, it needs no more orchids beside the hot iron. My fortune says you're killing your organs. My fortune says my co-star plays the sax, dime-sized nipples. My fortune says overpriced, overspend, up and down our screwball war. We light candles. You're rubbing mercury on me. I can't stand. I'll walk miles to beauty parlor madness. No hot packs allowed. And there are no connections to character readings. There are no smaller worlds. And I found my sickness in the gymnasium, my glittery bullshit disguised as a man, my dumbbell wrapped in leather, cracked in half as I fell, trapeze baseball snap, beginning and ending in Happy Hollow, skin so pink from the hot springs you call me a pig, baby bones in my hair, and life's for the living or murderous culprits or the taut made up bodies, but I put on your pajamas, hotel burning down, but I put on your ghost like the Ritz. Madcap baby lights. Beauticians always talk about my end, and I'll never wear another kind of bracelet again, and my roots are so dirty, and it's hard to be Jane when Jean was so pure, in white fur exchanging hearts and loops with Eleanor Roosevelt. It's hard to be nothing but personality. You ask for sex, and I hang up this phone, I break off your horns. Multiple pursuits make me sleepy. There's this whole pink universe I hate, where people fawn over fairy tales. I don't want to engage, but I'll wear all the shoes with big hearts on them and kill all the men silently with a powder puff scepter, blue and gold makeup, a sick kind of break. I want to be me again and walk under that glowing red water tank, but time is so weird. Everyone believes in their horoscopes and I shit out my pink toys over towers. I surmise and surround myself with my stuffed lambs covered in dust. Shake gently, apply color and wait. It's fevered and spooky, but who hasn't jumped on her train? Criticism shifty-eyed in an alien language, where we meet for cold picnics in a liminal cage, where I've grown antlers and Harlow rabbit ears. I'll make some money, and it will be okay, but the dappled piglet will die. It's staying light later, but they're skiing hills bare, and the grass bleeds underneath. And would the world be different for anyone had I never engaged? I just pace in circles, in high heels, low lit, beauticians tisking my roots. Thank you for listening.
Hi, my name is Micah Zevin, and I'm going to read a poem called Or Am I? I've been ground down like cornmeal and made into a tortilla by hand, rounded until I am warmed in a hot oiled pan and filled with sustenance. I long sometimes for a city far away from this one. I know it sounds crazy, far from its persistent, nagging traffic noises and perils, its screams and dramas, its cries for help, its draining commuters. But then I think, where will I find the same? Music to blister and soothe my ears, my mornings and nights on the rails, the same wild odors to make me hold my nose 1 second, then open it up with my eyes to curry and sweets and favor. I am neither watchdog nor whistleblower, yet I understand their necessity. Will we all be forced to resign? Will we all be crunched like cornflakes by many trampling feet, up and down stairs, banished to basement rooms until we forget who we are or give up, believing we are in too many pieces? I am not a living drug, or am I? We must all wipe our tears away so we can see, even if there is nothing worth seeing or hearing. Is this ever really true? I'm tired of listening to I don't know how to fix this for myself or anyone else not willing to dive off the deep end and figure out how to rise and stay afloat. I am not a living drug. Will I ever really die or be mended?
And here is Michael Martone reading a short fiction entitled Limited.
I saw the rock, saw the boy who threw it. I saw it hit the window next to the seat in front of me. Saw the window shatter instantly. Saw that now I couldn't see through the window anymore. And we were gone out of Warsaw on the Broadway Limited. We hadn't stopped at Warsaw, but gone through at 60 miles an hour. I saw the boy and the rock and his friends around him on their bicycles, and I imagined our train rocking the town, pushing the sound of the horn ahead along the tracks, not stopping. Now the whole car, everyone, is talking and pointing at the window. There is a high-pitched whistle. The light is different in the windows since the windows are tinted, and the guy who sits there has just come back from the club car, dumb with luck, not drunk enough yet. I could have been sitting there, he says again. Everyone is talking about the kid with the rock and the window, and outside now are cornfields and a few houses and the highway far away. The conductor is looking out the rear door of this last car, and it looks like he is shaving. He's not shaving, but whispering into a radio while he looks back at the tracks coming together. I saw the rock, saw the boy, I tell him. He says that it's not the first time. He's called someone who'll call the police. He's an old man. He's seen it all. He can't understand it. I saw the rock float along with us at our speed, saw it barely catch up to us. I saw the boys on the bike holding up their arms, jubilant, already tearing away from that place. The window went white. He waited for the engines and the baggage cars, the coaches, the dome, the sleepers, the diner, the cafe. He waited, the rock already in his hand. More sleepers, more coaches, this last car. He waits, sees the people in the window, something so big and so much metal, silver and blue, his whole town shaking, one long horn. He can't hear his friends egging him on. This rock won't stop a thing, won't slow nothing down. He throws it, and it is gone.
This is Jamming Their Transmission. I'm John Madera. You've been listening to Brendan Lorber, Elizabeth Costello, Hilary Leftwich, Jesse Bender, Jesse Janacek, Micah Zevin, and Michael Martone reading from their writing. Thanks to all the writers for reading for us today. That does it for our show. Thanks for listening to Jamming Their Transmission. I'm John Madera. Until next time, and always, be the strange you wish to see in the world.